Welcome back to Empower with Emma. We are on to episode 3 today, and I am beaming with joy, excitement, because the guest I have on today has been such a role model for me, an inspiration. His message that he spreads, definitely his book that I've read as well, listening to him over the years, is just amazing. He's a behavioral performance psychologist. He builds high performance teams, business teams, and he's the leading voice basically to rethink your mental health and how we think everything. It is the amazing Jerry Hussey. I can't wait for you to listen to this episode, because I could just chat to Jerry all day long. He inspires so many people, like I said, and myself, and I really, really hope you enjoy today's episode. Okay, so thanks so much for coming on. First of all, I know you're a very busy man in demand, but today on the pod, we actually have Jerry Hussey on. Jerry has been, I'd say, definitely one of my role models and people that I look to. And I just remember Jerry, before we get started, all those years ago, right? I was in Wellfest, and I remember sitting down where we were in the tent. And I didn't even discover mindfulness at that time. And I remember just being engrossed in your words. They were literally and it's so funny, Jerry, I still have those notes from Wellfest in my phone. So I resonated so much with you. And how did you get to that place on your journey of because I know you're a high performance coach and, you know, you really are passionate about what you do. How did you get to that place of, you know, finding out who you were and what your purpose was?
Thanks very much. You might send me on those notes. I could use them again.
Especially after 2 children.
Yeah, I'm learning all the time, and I need to remind myself all the time as well. I suppose, how did I get there? How did I get to be so passionate about it? One was, there's a lovely expression that says, you never know how strong you are until strong is the only option. So I was at a point at between 11 and 14 years of age where I was just racked with anxiety. It's like life was happening. I couldn't feel it. I just felt numb all the time. I had headaches, heart pains in my back, pains in my head, pains everywhere. And between that time, you know, trying to not end my own life was my biggest challenge, because I felt that I couldn't handle this pain, that my life had no meaning, I was useless, nothing I was trying was working, and not an idea about the mind, not an idea about we can train our brain. I didn't know about the gut brain axis. I didn't know about the sympathetic or the parasympathetic nervous system. I didn't realize that there's electrical frequency in the body. I just thought there was something wrong with my body, and I thought that how my brain felt was something to do with a defect of the brain, a chemical imbalance. And of course, you know, through my research over the years, we've realized that with so much power to regulate our own immune system, our own nervous system, we could change our brain chemistry. And that through the power of conscious thinking, we can change the shape and function of our brain, which is incredible. So I began to discover, by the age of 14 was the first time I really opened up to my parents about how anxious and how down I was. And we went from GP to GP, and eventually we finished with a pediatrician who did every blood test under the sun and brain scans, and eventually told my mother that I was perfectly healthy. And when my mother said, no, you've missed something, because he's not healthy. I see him. His heart has been racing. He just been sweats. He can't breathe at times. He feels like his heart is going to give up. He's not healthy. There's something wrong. I'll never forget. And there's moments in our life whereby they become pivotal moments where you suddenly realize my life is now taking a new direction. And when my mother said, well, what is it? He said, you have a perfectly healthy young boy. And if you want my honest opinion, he's making this up so he doesn't have to go to school. And it was the first time at 14 years old, I realized that the medical world had missed something completely. He never spoke to me. He never asked me questions. He never asked me what was I worried about. He didn't ever ask, how does it feel? He never actually sat and spoke to me. He analyzed parts of me and thought he was looking at me. But I was me. I'm not my heart, or I'm not my skin. So the brain scan was perfectly healthy, but I wasn't healthy. So it made me realize that 14 years old, and I didn't know the science to grasp it, but this idea that your body can be healthy, but I'm not healthy. So if the body's healthy and I'm not healthy, then I'm clearly not in the body. It's simple logic.
Yeah.
And that's where my pursuit of this has gone through neuroscience. If I'm not in the body, then where am I? It's an amazing question.
Yeah. And that's something like I really resonated that. Like, so your book, amazing, by the way. Like, I was there highlighting and taking notes, like everything. And it's something that I really resonated with when I was reading your journey. And I loved your vulnerability. Like, I could just really feel it, like, especially being a young boy in hospital, you know, the doctor saying there was nothing wrong with you. And then you having, you know, an aha moment when you were lying in the hospital and then saying, I remember reading it saying, right, I actually have to make my changes here. I have to make my own happiness. Like, it's in my brain. And for a teenager to actually experience that, because I remember your journey in the book, it was like, I was going through years of this chronic, like, depression, anxiety. And like, I remember even myself, Sherry, like, I would have dealt with a little bit of depression and anxiety as well, but you don't know what that is. It's like, why am I panicking? What's going on? Everything's fine with me. And that, but you're not really recognizing what really is going on. You connecting to your body. Like, so where was that pivotal moment for you of diving deeper into your soul, as you'd say, and actually being like, okay, I'm not just me in my brain, like I need to rediscover me, my soul, who I am, making me happy. When was that moment?
Around 14 or 15, when there was no doctor that seemed to have an answer, I had to start going on myself. So
that's, I suppose, so I'm young, lucky, like, that I'm so brain. Young.
I know, but it's not young when you've been exposed to what I was exposed, and you're fighting literally for your life. You have to come up with something, and people through different types of trauma, people will know that at times you have to grow up fast in life, and I had to grow up fast in life.
Yeah.
And I couldn't rely on a GP to tell me, and I couldn't rely on my teachers, because they wanted to study Oxbow Lakes and the theory of Pythagoras. Nobody wanted to talk about anxiety, depression, suicidal tendencies and where these come from. Yeah. So I had to just go on a journey myself. So the first thing I did was I got a notepad and I started to write down when I felt anxious, where I felt anxious. My body, and I suddenly realized, hold on, a lot of emotion is actually in the body. So I just used to just observe, and then I'd be getting really anxious, and I'd realize that if I could pinpoint the types of the body, then how was my, so I realized that a lot of anxiety is in the body. We know now 80% of emotion is actually in the body.
Yes.
So I said, right, it's not just in my head, it's my body. But then I started to do little simple practices whereby I'd start to maybe think of something for a split second. And I soon realized, for that split second, when I change what I'm thinking, my body changes.
Yeah.
And after a while, I asked this question, is the body controlling the mind, or is the mind controlling the body? And for the moment I could think about love, the moment I could think about being good enough, the moment I was saying positive things, the body was changing. So I had this very simple idea that emotion is in the body, but emotion is triggered by something. It's a chemical, electrical signal being sent into the body, but it's either triggered by a thought or it's triggered by something that's not in the body. So the body is responding to something.
Yeah.
And that was the big question. So then I started coming across books from Deepak Chopra. And Deepak started saying, you know, your body's not in your mind. Your mind's not in your body's in your mind. And then this idea that your thoughts and your emotions can change the biology, the electricity of your body, of your cells and your genes.
Yeah.
Now, when we think of that nowadays, that's so simple.
Yeah.
Because we know Nikola Tesla, Albert Einstein, Elon Musk, they all know that everything is energy. And Tesla and Einstein have always said, in order to understand the universe, you have to understand that it is energy. It is frequency. And even matter, any quantum physicist, any good scientist will tell you, even matter is energy manifesting as matter.
Yeah.
Even the atom, when you break it down and split it, it's energy.
Yeah.
But there is more energy in more space in the universe than there is matter.
Yeah.
You know, some scientists like Newton used to believe that empty space, so you had two people and the space between the two people was empty. Einstein proved it is not energy. Yeah. There is electrical waves that connect. Yeah. And quantum entanglement has proved that if you move one thing in the universe, it changes the frequency and changes everything else. So everything is connected. So suddenly I began to realize, hold on a second here. So if the brain is receiving a signal, and we know that from neuroscience, the brain doesn't generate the thought. It receives a command. So if the brain receives a command, then where's the command? And I started really digging this up, and I started looking at the work of Deepak Chopra. And then I came across a guy called Dr. Bruce Lipton. And he was looking at cells and genes and what they respond to. So when you had Dr. Deepak Chopra, Dr. Bruce Lipton, and quantum physicist all saying the same thing, matter responds to energy. I kind of realized the brain isn't the mind, because the brain is just a matter. The brain is just piece of the mind.
Yeah.
The brain is responding to the mind, so the mind has to be a field of energy. And we now know that we all have a resonance. We all know that every cell in the body is vibrating at 0.07 millivolts. We know that the brain is generating 23 watts of electricity. We can measure brain wave electricity. If anyone has ever had an ECG done on their heart, that is electrical energy. And if there is no frequency in the body, there is no life. A dead cadaver has genes, it has cells, it has chromosomes, it has blood, it has a heart, it has lungs, it has everything. But it's not alive, because the only thing missing is an electrical spark. So the very essence of life is the electrical spark.
Yeah, and it's so funny you say that, because it, like, it's energy meets with energy. So you know straight away if someone's in a bad mood and you stand in front of them, you can feel that vibration. You just know. It's like the elephant in the room. You walk in, you're like, oh my God, energy meets with energy. So even when I was doing my I'm a life coach in neuroscience, so I would have done like a bit of neuroscience as well. Yeah, they would have went into that, and it was fascinating, like absolutely fascinating.
And we have to, like, the human being is biological, it's chemical, and it's electrical. And you can't fully understand the human being until you understand that. Yeah. Now, medicine is a little bit slow to accept things like meridians, because there's no scientific evidence there. But it's not slow to accept we can measure electricity in the brain.
Yeah,
neuroscience, which is a scientific study, has now kind of came to the end where it said the brain actually is receiving a signal. And when you change your thought, your brain responds to that.
Yeah.
So neuroscience, which is science, is saying the brain receives a thought. The only question that people can't understand is, but where is it coming from? Medicine doesn't really want to, or it doesn't believe in a field of energy. But every other science in the world believes in energy, from telecommunications to electric cars. So every other world, every other discipline in the universe has embraced this idea of energy, except medicine.
And like the thing is as well, when you look at, say, like the likes of, you know, India, over like the east side, Eastern medicine as well, it's so different. Like, we're all about taking a tablet. So if you're suffering with, say, anxiety, depression, you go to the doctor, you get seen to. But we don't explore that Eastern side as well. Like you said, you know, the holistic approach, talking, you know, rediscovering your mind. Like for me, even I was on your Soul Space community 2 weeks ago, and I really opened up about things I've never opened up about. And I'm a firm believer of only the last, say, 3 years, I used to be always like, I'm fine. But the actual thing that I think what has gotten me through, and a lot of people don't do it, is the power of vulnerability. So even talking, opening up, relating to people, letting it go, understanding your thoughts. Why am I feeling like that? Because a big thing for me is, like, you know, the ABC model. It's like, okay, the activating thought means I'm going to lash out with that behavior, and that's going to be the consequence. So it's like a wheel. But I didn't even get, like, taught that in school. Like, so for me, like, my mom and dad broke up when I was 19. So I'm only realizing now in my latter years and my later years, I actually have certain traumas from that. And I was constantly in survival mode in my masculine energy, constantly like, have to do this, boom, boom, boom. Where now, through my, you know, experiences over the last 3 years and going through a breakup and selling the house and having all that and COVID, everything, where I'm only learning now, going through that healing process of that, other things are coming up now going, oh, I need to heal that pattern. I need to heal that trauma. Because as you know, if you don't know, people listen in as well. And I love reading into this as well and self-discovery about myself. Trauma is a psychic wound. We can't actually see it. It's internal and it's going to be triggered up by us. So like for you, you know, even like one thing I heard the other day, Jerry, and I was heartbroken by it. A friend of a friend, someone was suicidal. Okay. And the doctor told them to go to A&E. I was like, what? Like, that just doesn't make sense. Like, you know, that way, I just think that the way our side of things, like in Western side of things, are just like, we don't have, how would you say, that much support for that. And I think what you're doing as well is to encourage that, like, you know, and you were nearly at that place yourself with anxiety, with depression, like going down that route. And how would you guide people then on like where to start? Like, I know you were so young, but for people sometimes I found I wanted to start earlier on, but I didn't know what was going on inside me, but I nearly felt so overwhelmed. It's like, I have to go to therapy. I have to go to counseling. I have to journal. I have to do this. Like, it gets so overwhelming. And I only think with COVID, it is only going to get worse. So for people to show compassion to themselves, like, where would you say, like, where to start?
First thing I would say is to understand the science behind the human being. And we're taught biology and chemistry, but it's a bit like being taught that Irish language. It doesn't make sense to us. We're not taught in the right way. So most people like don't really know that your brain is a living, breathing, dynamic system. It is not a thing. So this idea, I'm not naturally confident. I'm not naturally good at playing the piano. I'm not getting matched in musical. There's no scientific evidence behind that. So the thing called neuroplasticity, which is the scientific proof that your brain is capable of change all the time. And through practice and deliberate practice, you are not, the brain you die with and the brain you're born with is not the same brain. So with deliberate intent practice, you can create any brain you want. Your brain is constantly responding to the parts of it you use, and it's constantly deleting the parts you don't use. So the things you think about, the things you listen to, the things you give your attention to are literally changing your brain. Secondly, there's a thing in the brain called reticular activating system. And that is a very simple system that keeps you safe. And it keeps you safe by doing something very simple. If you were to get into a car, if you were to consciously think about everything that could happen while you're driving the car, you'd never drive the car. So the reticular activating system is only letting you be aware of what you need to be aware of at that time. So driving the car, you're aware of the road, you're aware of the handbrake, you're aware of the you're not really aware that cars crash all the time and that anything. So the reticular activating system is like, it's like Google. If I went to Google today and I typed in blue cars for €20,000, suddenly on my WhatsApp, suddenly on my DAF, suddenly on my Dundee, I'm getting ads for this. The more social media works is we realize that if you express an interest, if you click, if you like, if you watch a video, that's analyzed. And now you get more of that content. And the stuff that you're not watching, not expressing an interest in, gets deleted from your feed. So you're creating an echo chamber. The brain does the exact same thing. The more you speak something, the more you listen to something, the more you talk about something, the more you give your attention to something, you're saying to the reticular activating system, I want to see more of this. I need you to look out for more of this in the universe, and I need you to delete all the other stuff. So things like visualization becomes a really powerful piece. Instead of Jerry saying, I'm Jerry, I have anxiety, I have depression, that's just the way I feel, that's just the way I am, I had to start speaking a totally different person into existence. And then we have to understand the science that everything you think about fires a signal into the nervous system. And if it's threatening, so if you're talking about crisis, lockdowns, bombs, wars, the signal, the brain thinks it's actually happening at the second. So it sends a signal into the nervous system that ignites the sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight mode. Now you're switching on adrenaline, you're switching in cortisol, you're switching on increased heart rate, and you go into a fight or flight mode. And in fight or flight mode, the limbic part of the brain, which is your stress center, opens up, and the prefrontal cortex, which is spatial awareness, depth perception, your ability to think clearly, shuts down. There's a reason we have a sympathetic nervous system, because in short moments, we need to be sometimes in that space. But what we need to know is that the body cannot sustain itself in the sympathetic nervous system. On the other side of the nervous system is the parasympathetic nervous system. And only when we're in the parasympathetic nervous system does your immune system switch on, does your cells heal, does your digestion and reproduction kick in. For every moment you're in the sympathetic nervous system, all of those things are switched off. Now, that was okay one time ago when people would work for 8 hours and come home and switch off. Mm, or we'd do something that was a bit frightening once a week. But now with phones, with emails, with this constant bombarding of terrible information, we are living in a constant fight or flight mode. We're in a sympathetic dominant state. Our parasympathetic nervous system is switched off. And because our parasympathetic nervous system is switched off, our genes and cells are being expressed in the hormones of stress. Our immune system is switched off. Our cells not rebuilding. Our organs are not being detoxified. And we are literally making ourselves sick. It is the scientific evidence that our thoughts and emotions create cellular, create chemical and biological changes. Our thoughts and emotions can make us sick. The good news is that the opposite is equally the same. Your thoughts and your emotions can actually make you healthy. You can begin to build a mind program that activates the parasympathetic nervous system through visualization or meditation or cold water immersion, where you're actively taking yourself out of fight or flight mode. You're reducing the amount of cortisol, reducing the amount of adrenaline in the system. You're switching on the parasympathetic nervous system. Your breathing slows down, and suddenly your brain, your central nervous system, your gut and your heart, which are the key pillars of our existence, now come into a state of coherence. And that's flow state. Too many people who have been given a label of anxiety, it's an overwhelmed central nervous system.
It's overstimulated.
Did a GP ever explain that to anybody?
No.
Most people don't know a sympathetic or parasympathetic nervous system. Most people don't know what a brain neuron is. Most people don't know that a gut brain axis connects your gut to your brain. And most people don't know that the vast majority of depression is caused by gut imbalance.
Yeah.
Everything you eat has a direct and immediate feedback into your brain.
And you know what's so crazy as well, Jerry? Like, I remember for years, so like, I'm the eldest, okay? So like I said to you, like, I would have had to, you know, like, help my family out and things like that as well. Like, but I always suffered with my stomach, my gut, and I didn't know what was wrong and everything like that. And then as I got older, I remember one time I got an ulcer on my stomach and I was like crippled in pain. I had to go to the D-doc, then, you know, the usual spicy foods, everything, and the IBS, everything. But only as I got older through education as well, and I take probiotics, is learning about your gut. Like, no one, we weren't taught this, is that our gut is our second brain. It weighs like 2 kilos, etc. But 90% of our happy hormone, serotonin, comes from there. And when you have a happy gut, it sends, you know, the brain signal, it's to your gut, and it's like, you know, electricity. And I never knew that. So me knowing, right, when my gut is in check, and it's like, trust your gut, you always know. It's like you feel that feeling, but it's connecting with your body like that. And I just thought, oh, you know, like what you said, Leigh, I just have a problem in my stomach because the doctor told me so, where I wasn't connecting with my body, going, oh, what do I feel? What do I need to do? So like, it's crazy to know that, like, when you connect in with yourself and make yourself in control of your own body, you have that power to literally change that life tune. Because even saying that as well, for me, like, I do mindfulness hikes and with people, and I'm building a community myself. And some people, I remember one time there was two women there, and I always encourage them. So we, for a short space of time, I say 5 minutes, but it's really about 15 to 20 minutes. We walk in total silence. So you can be submerged and hear, listen, feel, smell everything. And some people were like, I can't remember the last time I just walked in silence and felt everything. And this woman, I was out in Howth last week, she said, I walk this path sometimes and I just wanted to come on my own, but I listened to music. And when I took out my AirPods and were walking in silence, I just seen everything so much brighter, vibrant. And it was even like that. I went on a retreat last year, Jerry, and talking about mindfulness, we had dinner in silence every night. And it was like a party in my mouth. It was just, and the power of mindfulness, because I actually have a few quotes that you had. So I love one that you said, and it's like, when you're actually in that moment, I think a lot of people don't actually really submerge themselves in that moment or take advantage of it, because a moment, it doesn't last forever. We don't live in that moment. And it's like, you can recreate it every day, and but you're not living your truth.
Yeah.
So how do you live your truth?
My truth is living without an agenda, living without the need to be anybody or any identity, and not even ask myself, who am I today? Ask myself what feels right.
Love
so I've
that.
Built a business by saying things at times that have gotten me into, you know, like when you start to challenge conventional science and conventional wisdom, you get a lot of kickback. And sometimes you upset people. But like 20 years later, after being ridiculed for what I was saying, now I'm winning awards. And my book is bestseller. Because truth and science are the only thing. So you have to almost not worry about what other people think. You have to give up on this idea of success or failure. There's no success or failure. There's only happiness and unhappiness. And if it makes you happy, do more of it. If it feels right, do it. If it feels wrong, stop doing it. It's like people sometimes say to me, well, what's your idea on white bread? Should I eat it? And I say, why are you asking me? Well, when I eat it, I don't feel well. Well, what are you actually asking me? Or I'm in a job, it pays me really well, but I don't like it. What do you think I should do? What are you asking me? You know it.
Yeah.
So what happens is our heart, our soul knows the next step, but our brain resists taking it. Because what will people think? What if I fail? What if? So I live my whole life with this idea that our life is 900 months. We sleep 300. We only get 600 waking months on the planet. From a lot of people listening to this podcast, probably half that's already gone. So you've probably less than 300 months left.
I remember you saying that. Like, I was like, what?
So the end of the day is, what are you waiting for? Who are you waiting for? Who are you trying to please? The moment you become enough for yourself, you're free. So I live my life with this simple mantra. Today is a new day, a day I've never had before and a day I'll never get again today. What feels right today? Go do that. And I've walked away from full-time jobs. I've walked away from a full-time job 2 months after I took out my first mortgage. Because people will say, oh, well, he doesn't understand. It's all right for him. I've worked for years with no money. I've always followed my heart and I've never been wrong. It's not easy. The easiest thing in the world is put up with feeling negative, keep eating bad food, stay in a job you don't like, stay in a relationship you don't serve you, and wait for somebody else to solve your problems. That's the easy life. The hard life is making big decisions that your heart knows are absolutely right and your brain can't understand. And you're saying to your brain, I hear you, I respect you, but I'm not listening to you.
And how do you get through that? So there's obviously going to be times in your life as well that you know when you get a good opportunity, but you know there's something off. How do you get through that? So for anyone, you know, listening like that, and I think even myself, I'm only finding that balance as well, because your head and your heart will tell you two different things and your gut is another story. So how do you know? How do you pivot that in your own compass, in your own inner compass?
Yeah, you have to know what you're here to be and who you are. So like the biggest question, never ask, what do I do? Always ask any morning, who am I? What do I believe in? What are my values? What do I stand for? And you have to be able to answer that. So I have always in my own idea, me. So how do I manage me every morning? My family and the people I love. My message and my business. My message comes before my business. Because for years, my message was stopping me from building a business because it was so radical. It was so out there. It was so against conventional science that people were peddling stories about low-fat diets and people were peddling stories about chemical imbalance. That was scientifically wrong. But because the masses wanted to hear that, they were building a big business.
Yeah.
But I was saying I could never live with myself.
Yeah.
I could never live with myself if I put my business before my message. I've always said at the end of my life, I want to say that I took time to deeply, to the best of my ability, understand the true nature of the human being. that I've lived those things. I don't talk about any practice that I've never lived. So I talk about meditation, cold water immersion. I talk about visualization. I talk around gut imbalance, because I've lived all of those things. I am walking evidence that it works. If somebody asks me about something I've never done, there's only one answer. I don't know about that. I've never done that. So the first thing is to be a living, walking ambassador for what you believe in. So if I'm trying to build a business and worrying about followers and worrying about where the paycheck comes from, and I'm talking to people about being free, I'm a fraud.
Yeah.
And somebody said one time ago, you know, not too long ago, about this idea of so many now people are wellness this and wellness that, and so many stories are being peddled out there that he said, there's never been more people making money out of the area of their own incompetence. And that hit me hard. And he said, promise me you will only speak about things that you know are scientifically true and things that you've lived long enough to stand over. There's too many people on social media in different places talking about things that they're clearly not living.
Yes.
So my message has to be, do I understand it? Is it scientifically true? Have I lived it? Do I know it works? Not, is it popular? Will it get me likes? Is it the flavor of the month?
Yes.
I don't care about that.
Yeah, and I can totally relate to this, Jerry, big time, because for me, from doing soul searching over the years and self-discovery as well, like I've totally reinvented myself, but I've always had an interest in well-being, but it's always been behind the scenes. So like on Instagram, etc., like I grew my following through fashion. But I was doing all this work behind closed doors. But then I really tapped into my values, going, what are my values? So I was like, being authentic. Authenticity is huge for me, you know, love, kindness, compassionate, you know, self-expression, etc., nature, huge. So I really start tapping into that as well. And I started not just constantly doing things because I should be doing them or people want that. I was like, what does Emma want? What is your message? What is yourself? Not what people want to see. So that's when I started obviously diving deeper into myself and living mindfully as well, after studying like mindfulness as well, being really living in that moment. And I started putting out different content, what I felt right, what connected to my heart, doing this podcast, having these amazing, you know, conversations with people. And you can just tell. And then it's so funny by you even saying that now, it really solidifies and verifies me that I'm like, my message is more important than my business. My business is flowing because of my message and all the courses and everything that I've done. I was like the guinea pig for it before I went and I spread the message. And even the validation, and you can see yourself, Jerry, through what you do. Like people will come up to me and be like, oh my God, you're glowing, you're glowing. I'm like, what? But it's because I'm so passionate about what I do. I just love it. I get a kick off it. Like, same with yourself. How do you then, you know, like, you know, how do you keep yourself driven, motivated with this work? Is that just a passion that fuels your energy all the time? Like,
it's knowing why I do it. And it's me going back to that 11-year-old child who thought he was absolutely alone in the world. And you know, with soul space, we always say, in times of great darkness, light the little light you have and welcome the weary traveler. It's going back to that child at 14 being told by a pediatrician that he was making up so he didn't have to go to school. No kid should be told that.
No
kid feeling anxiety and stress. No kid with an overwhelmed central nervous system or a gut imbalance. And it's also the news that we are bombarded by food and pharmaceutical companies that is not science, that are not true. There's stories being peddled left, right, and center, and parents are trying to do their very best by believing in people, believing what we see in the television. Breakfast, the most important meal of the day. Where's the science behind that?
Yeah.
It takes 21 days to make a habit. No science behind that.
True, yeah.
Chemical imbalance causes anxiety. Show me the science behind that. When you start to hold people accountable to scientific evidence and people selling food that is full of, like, it's sugar-free, but it's full of aspartame, corn syrup, glucose, it's killing us. It's causing insulin spikes. And it's sold in a bar, the natural this, nature's way. It's horrible food.
Yeah.
Read the ingredients. So for me, that's what drives me. And there's an erosion of freedom happening at the moment because people are so scared and people are so stressed that they don't think things through. And we're consuming media that's not true. We're consuming food that claims to be one thing, but it's not.
Yeah.
We're trusting in pharmaceutical companies to tell us the truth, and we know they're not. They're constantly being sued, successfully sued. They're constantly being paid out. And it's like, oh, sorry, should we do it again? If you look at any of the major pharmaceutical companies and you look at their legal record, if that was a car manufacturer, if that was your local secondhand car store, you wouldn't buy a car off them. What grounds on what grounds do I get to believe here? And I think trust has to be earned. We'll all get it wrong. We will all make mistakes. Food companies, we all make mistakes. I make mistakes. But there's a difference when you know you're making a mistake and you perpetuate it. If you're putting a message out there that you know deep down is doing more damage than good, somebody has to stand up. And in my tiny little life, in a tiny little way, if I can stand up for science and truth, then there's no more special thing to be standing up for.
Yeah, because you're living authentically then as well, you know. And just going back to, remember you said a few moments ago, you at the start, you know, you didn't want to spread your message because you were coming up against like doctors. You just, you know, you were nearly like afraid to do it. You actually said something as well that, you know, to value social affirmation more than self-expression. And I absolutely loved that because I think we are driven in a society of external validation, of constant affirmation. Oh, I've done a good job. You're doing it right. But you're not going deeper about what you want. You know, how did you get to that point? Be like, right, I'm spreading my message here. I don't care what people say. I'm just going for it now. And obviously that was such a pivotal moment for you because look where you are now. So like, where was that moment where you were like, I'm going for it. I might get backlash when I'm doing it.
It's like, I'm willing to engage in conversation with anybody. So in fairness, I have to say to people, like, I'm not anti anything. And I think polarized thinking gets us in trouble. So Western medicine has its values and it has its downfalls. Eastern medicine isn't perfect either.
Yeah,
Chinese medicine, no, there's no perfect.
No.
What we have in the Western world is an amazing system that it treats acute illness with chemical or surgery. That's our medical system. So once we're clear on that, and at times, like, if you're about to bleed to death, there's no point trying to change your diet at that point. There's at times where the Western world needs to act. So what we have in our Western world is an acute medicine treatment program that uses two main methods, surgery and chemicals. And sometimes that's really important. That's what we need. So I'm not saying that the Western world is wrong, and I'm not saying the Eastern world is all right. I'm saying what we need is both of them to come together and realize unity. That there is truth and benefit in both. And then secondly is everything I say, because I'm so certain of the science, I'll invite anybody on to say it's wrong. And if it's wrong, then I learn and grow. So I have no problem being wrong. I'm not here to look good. I'm not here to pretend I know it all.
That's a good way to be, though.
If I put something out and say this is scientifically true, someone wants to come on and prove it's not, then that's great. We're all learning. So you can't be attached to being right or wrong.
Yeah.
So I'm always open to learn. I'm always open to better conversations. I'm always double checking my science. I'm always double checking. And if I'm wrong, I'm wrong. But what we can't do is take sides. And what I've never been into is, like, nowadays we think we're free thinking. But you're only free thinking if you agree with the masses. So whether it's about gender fluidity, whether it's about, it doesn't matter what it is. Whatever the masses say, that's what you have to think. And don't go against that. Like, what we tell children is stand up for what you believe in, speak your truth, and be true to yourself. Well, where did that go when it came to vaccinations about COVID? It was told, don't question, don't dare not do what we're going to tell you. And if you don't do what we tell you, we're going to punish you, even though you might be scientifically right. Now, everybody's saying that with hindsight, but there was no hindsight. Because at the beginning of all of this, there was enough scientific evidence to show that the process that we were taking was completely wrong. And I was publicly on air saying that. So it's not hindsight. So sometimes we have an opinion or we have a belief and we're deeply passionate about that. And that belief might be right to me in my life, but somebody else has the right to say, I'm not choosing that. It's like people trying to believe at times, because I don't know, I have a religious faith. But if I'm trying to convince you that God exists, that's not faith. Faith is believing in something you know has no scientific evidence. So in life, you can have faith in something, but there's no evidence. So sometimes we get caught up in opinions. Yes. But opinions are not facts. And you can have an opinion about something. You're entitled to an opinion about something, but that's not fact. And not everybody has to buy into that.
Yeah.
So what we have is this erosion of freedom. Whatever the masses say is what you have to accept. And anybody that doesn't accept it, anybody that speaks against it, anybody goes against the flow, well, they're wrong. What we need is a diverse world that says, when it comes down to certain things, people have to have fully informed consent. People should take time to find the science behind it. People should ask, does that apply to me? Because generic numbers about generic people doesn't really matter. Does it apply to you? Does it feel right to you? And if it doesn't, then you should have the right to challenge or to question, which we was completely gone during COVID. Do not question.
Yeah.
Do not challenge. And if you question or challenge it, social media will take you off. Not because you're scientifically incorrect, but you're not saying what we want you to say. And that's my worry at the world at the moment, is that we're creating these funnels where we create this echo chamber where only certain opinions and only certain values and only certain comments can be put in there. And people get so afraid of being outside of the masses. People get so afraid of being rejected and following, losing followers, that they don't say what they know to be true. And that's a dangerous place for human beings to be.
Yeah, it's like everything is black and white, but we're not allowing the gray. And the gray area is where the opinions, the different, you know, identities, these open conversations, these are the things what we need to be having. And I think as well, you know yourself, Jerry, like we've been conditioned to be like the stories they tell us. Yeah, you have to do this and there's only this and there's only that. And we just go along with that. We never kind of were, you know, philosophical and being like, but what is that? It's like curiosity, but how does that work? You know, and I think that nearly goes back to your mind. It's like the stories we tell ourselves all the time. And one thing for me, what I always kind of preach as well, and which I take on board is like, you know, when you go into this tangent and you're literally creating anxiety in your body, you're creating everything. It's the stories we tell ourselves. But when I actually say, Emma, is that a fact? Like, where is the actual evidence of that? There's none. I'll go on. Go away. And then I just move on. I just crack on.
I know. To be able to listen to your own thoughts without attaching to them is the gift. Yeah. Not every thought is right. Not every thought is wrong. And even if a thought is right, you can give it attention or you don't. And that is the observer self. And that's the biggest part of my next book, is I'm looking at this ability to live in an uncertain world with peace. So you have the thinker and the observer. If you think you're the thinker, then you're a victim of the brain all the time. And the brain is the threat detection system. But you can have a thought. So you can... like you could think, anyone could think this second, think there's a pink elephant going to come through my window. But because you don't believe in pink elephants, there's no emotion. So you can only emotionally react to something you believe in.
Yeah.
So your brain can have the thought, a pink elephant's going to come in my window. But the observer itself is saying, no, that's not true. So not everything we think is true. And even if it is true, even if an elephant is going to come through your window, well, that's okay, because the door is behind me. I'll just go out the door.
Yeah.
So what we have to do is get out of the thinking self. That's just a voice. That's just a threat detection system. That's like a toddler. Just, are we okay? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? Are we there yet? And to be able to hear that without attachment, without resistment, and for the observer self to say, I hear that thought, and right now I'm giving it no attention. And the moment you don't give an emotion to a thought, the thought stops, because the neuron in the brain stops to fire. The only person that can perpetuate a thought or an emotion in you is you. And if you don't give an emotion to a thought, the thought stops instantly.
Yeah. And it's crazy because, like, even for me, I know a few years ago, so I used to go to a kinesiologist as well, and she had a book and she had like certain pillars as well. And one that really resonated with me, and I had a coaching client yesterday, was, and it's so important, I think, for everything, we're all beings of, we're constantly doing all the time. I need to do this. I can't relax. I have to do that. But we actually don't take time out to just be, a human, to just chill out, to connect with ourselves. And that was a big thing for me, because for years I was living in that like stress mode, and I didn't know there was something wrong with me. I had to constantly keep going. Where with COVID, when it did hit, I was like, I actually have to stop. I have to be, I have to connect, I have to open up, I have to be vulnerable. But now I'm so much more aware of not only my surroundings, people's energy, myself, nearly too much. But it's a gift that I, like, you know, you can work on yourself, and then just stopping yourself, go, no, stop, just be, connect with yourself. That I think, especially now, we're nearly being encouraged to constantly do more, do, like, especially with people working from home, they nearly feel they're not doing enough because they're not going into the office. Like, it's no one's taking that time out to just be and connect with themselves.
Yeah, we get connected to the chemicals of stress. So hormones like cortisol and adrenaline are very addictive. And the problem with that is then we start to crave them. So you wake up in the morning, you're relaxing. Your instinct is to go into your work emails, go into your WhatsApp, read news, turn on the Joe Duffy show, find something that's stressful. So we become so conditioned to living in the hormones of stress and the chemicals of stress that we actually become addicted to them. And then we're constantly looking for, creating, talking about, thinking about something that gives us a release of cortisol and adrenaline. So when you start to slow down, you'll find it's very hard on the body. You're literally trying to detox. So you'll be reaching for your phone, and you have to fight that for a few days because you have to change the chemistry. And then we know dopamine, which is your reward hormone. Every time you feel that need, by a phone, you get a like, it releases dopamine.
Yeah.
Every time you drink the coffee, eat the chocolate, drink the glass of wine, you're releasing dopamine. Most people, when they drink a cup of coffee, they feel better instantly. But it takes coffee 45 minutes to hit your system. What made you feel better was the dopamine. And when you're not giving the dopamine creates pain. So like an anxiety. So very often when we start to slow down and we have to change the chemistry of the body, for the first few days, it will feel hard because now your body is screaming for, give me the cortisol, give me the adrenaline, give me the dopamine. And you have to say no.
Yeah.
And you have to put the phone beyond reach. You have to get rid of all the junk out of the house. You have to get rid of the alcohol. Just get rid of it, because you have to be able to stand up to yourself. And once you do that for 3 or 4 days and the body starts to recenter and you start to bring in new hormones of oxytocin, which is the love hormone, and you start to feel at peace. And now you suddenly realize, I never realized how stressed I was.
Yeah.
But everybody else looking at you could say, well, I could have told you that because you're going 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
But we have to bring in that level of awareness. And when people start to slow down first, be aware and be prepared that your body will chemically fight you to stay the same. And you have to be prepared. So you have to set yourself up. Like I said, get the chocolate out of the house. Put the phone beyond you. Make sure there's no alcohol. Whatever your go-to trigger was for dopamine, get rid of it.
Yeah.
And now you're in a position to chemically, biologically change the nature of your nervous system. Shut down the sympathetic nervous system and open the parasympathetic nervous system. And then you start to use things like, now you can slow down. Now I can meditate. Mm-hmm. Now I can visualize. Because the noise has gone out of my brain. The noise has gone out of my body. And when the noise goes out, now there's a quietness. And in that quietness, now you have awareness. You can look at my life. Mm-hmm. Do I really love this job? Am I really happy in this relationship?
Mm-hmm.
And now you can ask those deeper questions because you've moved beyond the noise of the nervous system. You've moved beyond the brain and you're actually connecting to your soul.
Yeah. And like, I can totally relate to that because yes, I've been living that way for some time, but now it's like, I know now what I need to do because I'm listening to that inner self of being like, no, that's not good for you. And it's nearly like, it's a constant habit. And you're just running on autopilot and you're like, reach for the phone, cup of tea, chocolate with that as well. But you're not even noticing what it's actually doing to yourself. Like, it's just a habit and it's breaking that habit
you
as well.
You think you're craving the chocolate, you're craving the dopamine.
Yeah.
And after a while, it's not the chocolate or the coffee you crave, it's the dopamine. And that's what we have to be prepared for. Breaking a habit only is successful when you break the dopamine reward to the habit.
Yeah.
And you can quickly build dopamine. If you start doing yoga, you start jumping in the sea, you start every time you cold shower in the morning, and you begin to enjoy those things. Believe it or not, then the dopamine starts to attach to those new habits. So you wake up in the morning, it's like your first thing is to crave, geez, I want to go for a swim, or I'd love to do some yoga. And instead of saying, oh, I need to do yoga, I need to do some gym, I need to have a green juice. Now you actually wake up and you start to crave that. And then you look at a bar of chocolate and you're like, I couldn't eat that now. I couldn't eat that. You look at a loaf of white bread and I couldn't eat that.
Yeah.
There's no part of me that craves that anymore now.
Yeah.
Because there's no longer a dopamine attachment to that thing.
Yeah, and that's crazy that you say that, because I remember talking to one of my guests, Pat Dively. He was talking about dopamine detoxes. Have you ever heard of that?
Yeah.
And I was like, oh my God. I was like, we definitely should do more of them. Obviously, you're getting rid of a lot of things, like your phone, like loads, you know, whether it's like sugar cravings, everything like that. And I found it really interesting as well, because obviously we are society, we are led on dopamine because of, like, you know, phones, everything like that. But for me, I remember, obviously, I used to bounce up out of the bed, either look at my phone straight away, cup of coffee, do my makeup. Now I kept on saying, I shouldn't on myself. But then one day you do start to go, okay, I want to do this. So for me, my non-negotiables, I'd get up and I'd say, I'd have days I might go to the gym, but I read or I journal every morning. And that's just before I do anything. I might have a cup of tea and just sit there and do that. And I just can't. I ease myself. And then an hour later, I might check my phone, and I find it's like I'm my own guinea pig. I try this out. And when I do that, then I'm not as activated. I'm not as like, oh, what's everyone doing? And there was a great explanation for this. I think Jay Shetty said or something. It's like, you know, when you open up your phone in the morning, it's like you're opening up your door and you're just letting thousands of people in. It's like, no, close that door. Be with yourself in the morning. And like, it's insane that, like, what do you do now in the morning? Do you have a morning routine that sets you up to fill your cup in the morning?
Most mornings at 5:30, 6 o'clock the latest. And from 6 to 8, I move the body, because emotions are held in the body.
Yeah.
So we have to change the biology and chemistry. So I do some type of exercise. I would, some form of cold water immersion, either jump into an ice bath or 1 minute or 2 minutes cold shower. I would meditate and I would journal and set my day up. I would spend at least an hour and a half every morning preparing for my day, because that is the rudder of the day. And if you get the morning right, if you enter the day from a balanced mind, from a calm nervous system, if the adrenaline and cortisol is out of your system, you approach the day in calm, and 90% of the time you're going to have a great day. And even if you don't have a great day, if you encounter something difficult, you're coming from a place of calm and perspective. But if you wake up in the morning and you instantly fill your nervous system with adrenaline, cortisol, and other people's news and Instagram and all this other crap, then that's the version your day is going to go in. So you have to set yourself up in the day. And that's why I get up at 5:30, and I've been doing that for years and years.
You're the 5 a.m. club.
Yeah, well, I think I was doing it before there was a club.
I know. And like, you know what? And I think because I only recently moved somewhere else like 2 days ago. And it's like me, I know myself now. I'm like, okay, I want to create more habits as well. Like, I go to the gym, but like you said, I do sea swimming, but it's habit stacking. It's doing those things that suit me. Because you know the way you'd always have people saying, I wouldn't have time for all that. It's like, you literally just pencil in time for yourself, like 5-10 minutes. Like, you don't have to create a whole huge morning routine. Do something what suits you. Like,
15 minutes is 1% of your day. So keep that in mind. It's only 1% of your day. And this is for your health. This is for your well-being. If you're actively living in a place of stress, you will get sick. And what I always say to people is, if you don't take time to manage your health, you will have to take time to manage your sickness. We cannot sustain a sympathetic dominant state. We cannot sustain living on processed food. We think we can. For years, we tell ourselves lies. And then at the age of 50, 60, 65, we get a crisis or a diagnosis. How did this happen?
Yeah.
It didn't fall out of the sky. And a lot of these illnesses take years to manifest.
Yeah.
So if we have to commit to health and well-being, it is not selfish. You're doing it for yourself. You're doing it for your family. You're doing it for your children. It's what it's you giving a gift to everybody yourself. If you're going around stressed and anxious, you're a gift to nobody. But if you can approach the world from a place of health and calmness and joy and love, now you're a gift to everybody. So it's not selfish to take time, whether it's, even if it's only 15 minutes, to stop, to breathe, to journal, to meditate, to just sit and watch the sky. It's what we have to do. We are nature. We're born to be in nature. We have to see nature, and we have to begin to immerse. If we constantly eat processed food, living in artificial light with artificial air conditioning, we removed ourselves from where we should be, which is in nature.
Yeah, and that's it. Like I go out on walks, and I remember I used to constantly put AirPods in, and I'd be looking at my phone, I'd be looking at the steps, where now I do, like, I obviously, you know, work out, things like that, but I mindfully walk every day, and I'd be in nature, and oh my god, like, I could walk the same park, I could walk everywhere, and I would get like rushes through my body, like tingles all the time, and just be so engrossed in it and appreciative of it. And that's when you know you're really connecting in with that as well. So, like, what message then would you have to your younger self if you were given advice today?
Yeah, I think it's probably a lovely way to finish. What is the advice? The advice I'd give myself is be kind to yourself. Stop comparing yourself to other people. Stop rushing and racing. Life is extremely short. And everything and everybody in your life, you'll have to give up. So take time to be with yourself. Speak to yourself with kindness. Appreciate every day and everybody, because there'll be a day we have to say goodbye to all those. Life is short. The only success is happiness. Ask yourself, who am I living my life for? Why am I chasing these goals? Are they making me happy? What do I need to let go in life? And the ultimate question is, what would love do? If you truly loved yourself and you realized how short life was, what would you do? And then just have the courage to go and do that.
That is absolutely beautiful. Like, I think a lot of people are going to resonate with everything you've said there, and even your last words as well. So, like, to end things as well, I could sit here all day talking to you. Like, thank you from the bottom of my heart for coming on and spending this time. Like I said to you, you've definitely been such a role model to so many people's lives and to my own. And thank you so much for coming on and taking the time, Jerry.
My pleasure, anytime. And as I said to everybody, just be kind to yourself, be kind to other people. The world doesn't need more anger or judgment or cynicism. It just needs more love, more patience, more kindness. And when you can start by being loving and kind and patient to yourself, you can extend that to everybody. So that's my hope. My hope is that we just remind ourselves that love, kindness, and patience, and that everybody's on a different journey. And even though you might understand somebody, they might annoy you, just let them be. Give them kindness and give them love, and I think we'll be better. So thank you, Emma. Thanks for all
that you do
as well.
And thank you so much. Hopefully see you soon in person.
Please, God.
Bye. Yeah. See you later. Bye, Jerry. Bye-bye. Well, that is it for today. Like, I just loved every single minute listening to Jerry. He is just amazing. I could talk to him all day, like I said. And even to think, when I was sitting underneath that tent in Wellfest listening to him those years ago, that I'd have him on my podcast now, and being on the Soul Space community there 2-3 weeks ago. I love everything he does, and with his wife Miriam, you know, the message they spread, I think it's just amazing. And I hope you love today's episode. I would also love if you could like, follow, subscribe, or rate my podcast over on Spotify, as it means the world to me. I hope you have a gorgeous week, and I will see you next week.